Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, September 20th, 2020. I'm Steven Jensen. Got a lot to talk about this week, so I'm going to give you a list of topics, and we're going to jump right into it. So on this edition of the Weekender, we have results for the Ring of Honor Pure Title Tournament. There's been two matches so far. I'm going to talk about those. We had the return of NXT UK. We have results for 205 Live, results for Impact Wrestling, 2 days worth of results for the New Japan G1 Climax Tournament. We have UWN Primetime Live results, the show that included Nick Aldis versus Mike Bennett for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. We got results for Warrior Wrestling Stadium Series. We have a recap for the latest Being the Elite episode titled A Very Slippery Slope. And as always, I have my recommended show for you on independentwrestling.tv. So we're going to start right there. IWTV recommended show this week is Action Wrestling's Last Call. So the company is called Action Wrestling, and the show is called Last Call. This show was, I believe it was filmed on September 4th and then aired about a week or so later on independentwrestling.tv. This show was stacked. Really, really enjoyed it. Started off with Nolan Edwards versus Kevin Ryan. We had BK Westbrook versus Bobby Flacco. Bobby Flacco, side note, was actually part of 205 Live this week, which we'll talk about a little bit later. We had Johnny Janela versus Jaden Newman, Graham Bell versus Manders, Eric Royal versus Shug D, and for the Action Wrestling Championship, AC Mack defending against Brett Eisen. So, highlight a few of these people here. Nolan Edwards versus Kevin Ryan. Really, really enjoyed this one. I think these two guys are really two guys to really keep your eyes on going forward. Kind of newer names in the scene, and Nolan Edwards especially. This is just my personal opinion. Nolan Edwards especially is someone to keep your eyes open for. Bobby Flacco, like I just mentioned, just recently had a match on 205 Live, which I think is just great. Hopefully we see him more often in the future. Donnie Janela recently popped up on AEW Dark. He has no real relation to Joey Janela, at least that I've ever heard, and I know people really close to him. So he just looks like him a lot, but it's kind of an interesting character. He mainly does this kung fu thing. He also goes by Kung Fu Janela. I remember him when he was like Donnie Primetime, I think, is when I first started watching him a few years back. And then you have Jaden Newman, who is incredible for his age, and he has so much experience already. He started training when he was around 15 years old. He's probably only like 21 or so now. Still has so much potential, hasn't even really gotten started, but already has accomplished a lot, if that makes any sense at all. He's really most known for his stuff in the Chattanooga, Tennessee area, with companies like the Scenic City Invitational. Also has done plenty of stuff with SUP in Nashville, and kind of all over the place. So, definitely keep your eyes open for Jaden Newman, if you haven't already. He's a guy who's made a lot of waves, but like still, like I said, like he still hasn't even really gotten started yet, which is like really wild to think about. Him in 10 years, it's a guy, I think in 10 years, everyone in the wrestling world will know who Jaden Newman is. We also had Graham Bell versus Manders. I am not exaggerating here. This is probably my favorite match of 2020. I know that a lot of people probably disagree with me there, but I just love this for exactly what it was. The way Graham Bell wrestles, there's certain things that he does that I just really, really like. He does the I can't remember what Japanese wrestler off the top of my head like popularized this, but he does. I remember it mainly from the old N64 video games when wrestlers would go to the top rope and they would hit elbow drops where like their back is towards the ring and you just fall backwards and elbow drop someone versus being looking at them. It just something just a little bit different. Graham Bell did that. Him and Manders went out there and had just such an entertaining match. Like, it didn't go super long. They did everything they needed to. Action-packed from start to finish. False finishes. You had guys no-selling and then selling like crazy and then hitting power moves and then jumping off the top. And it was so good. I cannot stress how much I enjoyed this match. And I have made sure on social media to say it as much as possible. I have tagged Action Wrestling. I've tagged Manders. I've tagged Graham Bell. And just everything I can over the last couple of weeks, or I guess the last week or so since I've seen this match, just letting the company and the wrestlers know that I really appreciate what they did, because I really, really enjoyed this match. If I recommend this whole show, obviously, but If there's only one thing you have time to watch on this show, I would highly recommend checking out Graham Bell versus Manders. One, because the match was incredible, and two, because you may not be as familiar with these two guys, and after watching this match, I think you'll be a fan of both of them. So, huge shout out to Graham Bell and Manders, and also shout out to Graham Bell for rocking a bazooka. I mean, that guy, if you've never seen him before, he brings a bazooka out to the ring. The first time I saw him was also at SUP in Nashville, Southern Underground Pro. Same with Manders, but both of these guys have just been killing it on the Southeast, and now they're killing it just all over the place. Love seeing what they did for Action Wrestling, which, once again, this show came from Tyrone, Georgia, which is pretty close to me. We also had Eric Royal versus Shug D. This was a really good match, too. This one went pretty long, but there was a lot here. Really great storytelling. Some kind of weird stuff, but some really great stuff as well. This is one where Dylan Hales, who plays a big part in this show, I saw him tweeting during this, and I think this was the match he was most looking forward, or the most interested in hearing feedback about, I'll put it that way. And I could see why, because they put a lot into this match. There was some comedy stuff, there was really serious stuff, there was false finishes, it was a really good match. I don't want to give anything away with any of these, but this was really good as well. A totally different kind of match than what we got between Manders and Graham Bell, but it's one of those things where, like, you might watch the show and be like, oh, Graham Bell Manders was really good, but man, I don't know if it was the best match of the year. Then you see Eric Royal and Shug D, maybe that's a little more your kind of cup of tea, whatever you want to call it, and you see that and you're like, oh, wow, I'm glad I watched the show because this was incredible. You know, there was a lot of really good stuff on this show. We also had the main event, Action Championship match. So for those of you who don't know, AC Mack currently holds the Action Wrestling Championship belt as well as the Bone Storm Championship, which is the heavyweight title at SUP. So he is a dual champion. Action and SUP, I basically consider sister companies. A lot of the same people behind the scenes, a lot of the same on-screen talent. We've been seeing a lot of people from Action actually popping up on shows like AEW recently. Like Ben Carter recently popped up on Dark. We've seen Lee Johnson as a part of MJF's cabinet. We see Alan Angels on a weekly basis as a part of the Dark Order as 5. And there's plenty more that I'm not mentioning. But this is definitely a company to keep your eyes on, especially if you're a fan of AEW, because there's been a lot of people popping up from Action on AEW. Same with SUP, but like Action even more especially. Probably because they're run out of Georgia, and I know that AEW is taking a lot of their, I don't want to call them enhancement talent, but they're giving a lot of people chances from this area because there's a lot of overlap with who trains, who's available, that kind of stuff. As far as this main event is concerned, we had AC Mack and Brett Eisen, and I just mentioned how AC Mack holds those two titles. Brett Eisen was the one who he actually won the SUP championship from. So AC Mack was already the reigning Action champion, and then he came in and he won the Bone Storm title. And they're going to be having another match in the near future, but this has been a hell of a feud with two title belts on the line, and this feud overlaps between two companies. It's also something where we really got screwed as fans because of the pandemic, as far as the story is concerned, because there was a lot of Action versus SUP stuff going on, where wrestlers from each promotion were kind of invading the other, and kind of the big leaders, I would consider, of the two brands, being AC Mack being the leader of Action Wrestling and Brett Eisen being the leader of Southern Underground Pro. So this has been a really cool feud, and it's still ongoing, and I really highly recommend y'all check all of this out. So once again, my recommended show this week on independentwrestling.tv is Action Wrestling's Last Call. It's available right now. I can't stress it enough. Love this show. Moving on to more stuff that I loved. We had the Ring of Honor Pure Championship Tournament. It finally kicked off, and we got two incredible matches. I can't say enough good things about all of this. We had Jay Lethal defeating Dalton Castle. We had Jonathan Gresham defeating Wheeler Yuta. Two just incredible matches. Both matches are available for free. You can watch them right now on Ring of Honor's website. You can also find highlights on Ring of Honor's YouTube channel if you don't have time to watch the full matches. Just such good stuff. I'm so happy this belt is back, this rule set is back. For those of you who don't know, there's no closed fists. There's like a three rope break rule. there's a bunch of like these different rules. I've even heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but I even heard that if somebody interferes during a pure title match or a pure tournament match, that that wrestler gets fired or suspended, one of the two, like immediately, which I think is just an incredible rule to keep it one on one. And as I said in my predictions, I figured Jay Lethal would win and I figured Jonathan Gresham would win. So I was right in both of my picks. But what I was most pleased with is I'm not the biggest Dalton Castle fan, but I thought he had a fantastic showing against Jay Lethal here. So this was one of those that really changed my perception on Castle. And I've been watching him wrestle for years, but like this was one of the first times I've watched a match of his and really left being like, damn, he's way more talented than I give him credit for. And I know a lot of that can go on Jay Lethal as well because of how good he is. But I gotta give Dalton Castle the credit. I rarely do on this show, and it's unfair, especially when he puts on performances like this. So huge shout out to Dalton Castle. Huge shout out to Jay Lethal. The obvious choice is here to win, but I think it totally makes sense. I've said it plenty of times. When it comes to pro wrestling, I think sometimes doing the most obvious thing is just the route to go. Because if it makes sense, it makes sense. If it makes sense and it's a good story, just do it. I feel like a lot of fans nowadays are just too concerned with swerves and not seeing things coming. And just like, if it's good, do it. Like, I can't stress that enough. Jay Lethal beating Dalton Castle was the right move. Jonathan Gresham beating Wheeler Yuta was the right move. And speaking of, I thought this was an incredible match also. And Wheeler Yuta looked incredible too. He's a guy that I've been talking about for a long time, especially if you've been listening to The Weekender. I talk about him very often on the show. I think that he's always been a really talented in-ring competitor. I was first made aware of him during Dojo Pro, which was a few years back. They filmed that in Nashville. I was there live, got to see him up close in person for, 3 days straight, and I've followed his work from there with Beyond Wrestling and all the other stuff he's been doing. I love seeing that he's popped up in Ring of Honor. I said it before on last week's episode. I think that there's a little something missing with Wheeler. I don't know if it's like that it factor. There's something missing there, but he came damn close to closing that gap against Jonathan Gresham. Like, I think that a lot of people probably saw Yuta for the first time in this one, and I hope that they were impressed with what they saw because I thought he had a really good showing against Jonathan Gresham. I said it before. I think that Jonathan Gresham should win this entire tournament, and I think that this was a great opening round for himself and Jay Lethal. I have that as the finals. Jay Lethal versus Jonathan Gresham. The two Ring of Honor tag team champions going head to head for the pure title. I think it's just a great story. I think it makes total sense. Once again, they're like the two top ranked guys, and it's the most obvious decision you can come to. But I think it's like so odd. It was one of those things that's almost like a double negative or reverse psychology, right? It's like, it's so obvious that the two of those would be in the finals that you figure there'd be a swerve, but because you figure there'd be a swerve, they might as well just go the original route, you know what I mean? And where this will head is we have in the next round, Lethal will take on the winner of Finley and Romero, who I have chosen as Finley, and Gresham will take on the winner of Delirious and Matt Sydal, which I've chosen as Matt Sydal. So we'll see where all this goes. We also have the upcoming opening round matches of Silas Young versus Fred Yehi, where I have Yehi winning. We have Williams and Taylor going on. I have a Hot Sauce Tracy Williams winning that one. We've also got Josh Woods and Kenny King coming up. I've got Kenny King getting the win there. And we've also got PJ Black versus Tony Deppen in the first round. And I'm taking Tony Deppen for a big upset there. So a lot of really good stuff coming up for the Ring of Honor Pure title. And this was a hell of a start to that tournament. Two great matches that I highly, highly, highly recommend that y'all check out. Once again, they're available for free on the Ring of Honor YouTube channel. So if you have the time, I don't know if you consider yourself to be a pro wrestling fan, I think these are must-watch matches. And that's pretty much the highest praise I can give something. So far on the show, I've already said that quite a bit. Like, those two matches for the pure title, and then Action Wrestling, like I said, Manders and Graham Bell, I just loved it. Moving on, we had the return of NXT UK. Started off with the tag team champions, Gallus, defeating the team of Amir Jordan and Kenny Williams. This was a non-title match. The finish came when Gallus hit a Enziguri and Power Slam combo. After the match, Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster, The Hunt, Pretty Deadly, Ashton Smith, and Oliver Carter all came out, and they're basically all trying to line up, and they want shots at Gallus' tag team titles, so there's a lot of contenders available there going forward. After that, we had a segment between Piper Nevin and Kaylee Ray. Piper Nevin's going to be wrestling Kaylee Ray for the NXT UK Women's Championship on next week's episode of the show. After that, we had Valkyrie defeating Isla Dawn. Got the win after hitting a top rope split leg drop. And in the main event, Elijah Dragunov defeated Noam Dar to become the official number one contender to the NXT UK Championship. He'll be taking on Walter. During this match, Alexander Wolfe interfered and tried to help Dar, but it was not successful because Dragunov still won the match. Got the win after hitting his finish at the Torpedo Moscow to get the 1-2-3. After the match, Walter came down and he stared down Dragunov because there will be a title match. It's official. It will be Walter versus Dragunov for that belt. And I know that, at least I remember hearing a while back that Triple H was really high on Dragunov, so this isn't surprising. And he's a really good talent. I just don't see a point in taking the belt off of Walter at the moment. So I'm going to imagine Walter will retain at the end of the day here. But I feel like this is just a total guess. And this is also, of course, contingent on who's available and how they can position everything with, like, being able to travel and all that. But I think Dragunov will probably wind up, like, I don't think he beats Walter for the title, but I do think he eventually kind of winds up more as a part of the regular NXT show that we see on USA Network. If they can get him to the States safely and more often, I think that he's more kind of better suited there, unless they're going to give him a title run in NXT UK. I just don't see that happening over Walter. I still think there's a lot of great stuff there too, because you still have Dragunov, you have Finn Balor obviously as the NXT champion. You can do Dragunov and Balor. You also have the obvious overlap there where Balor and Walter could go at it for all the gold at some point. They were really building towards Balor versus Walter before the pandemic and all that stuff. So I'm very interested to see what happens with all these moving pieces. But like I said, at the end of the day, I fully expect Walter to retain the title here. But I think him and Dragunov will have a really, really, really good match. So good to see NXT UK back. Good to see this first show. Really enjoyed it. Thought it was solid. The storylines are still moving. The title belts. Everything was reestablished. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next week. And like I mentioned, next week we have a NXT UK Women's Championship match as well. Piper Nevin taking on Kaylee Ray. So I'll be giving you the results for that next week on the show. Moving on, we got some 205 Live. Ari Daivari wrestled 3 matches back to back to back. He called it Daivari's De Niro division. We had Daivari defeating Eli Knight, and then Ari Daivari defeating Bobby Flacco, who I mentioned during my Action Wrestling recommendation. Bobby Flacco was on that show. I also saw Bobby Flacco getting a big shout-out from Eddie Kingston on Twitter after this, so really cool for him. We also had Ari Daivari defeating Jason Kane. All 3 of the finishes came with Daivari hitting his Hammerlock Lariat to get the 1-2-3. So continuing to build Daivari, continuing to build this whole idea of you know, his money is being more and more highlighted in that kind of stuff. So it's character building. It's making him look better. It's one of these things where, like, you bring in, this is no slight on these guys, but you basically bring in 3 jobbers, have Daivari look really good against all 3. So it establishes him as a level of, like, Daivari's not a jobber. He's not a main event guy, really. We're talking in the context of 205 Live, of course. He's not really, like, a main event level guy with 205 Live. He's not really, like, a jobber. He's really more of kind of a mid-level, mid-card type guy. And you can establish that by having him beat 3 jobbers back to back to back. Now, if he was going in there and having, like, really competitive matches with these guys and just getting away with the skin of his teeth, that'd be a little different. But I think this was used how it should have been here in this match. And or these three matches, and it made Daivari look really good, and, you know, they're going to continue to build him the way that they're building him right now, and I'm okay with it. After that, in the main event, the only other match we got on 205 Live this week, we had Tony Nese defeating Danny Burch. Finish came after Nese hit the running Nese for the 1-2-3. Another solid showing. I mean, this is literally exactly what you would expect. Just solid match between two guys who always have solid matches. I talked about this with Alex Pulowski when we were doing one of our NXT post shows over on the Fightful YouTube channel. And we were talking about how Timothy Thatcher on NXT needs to build like this army of catch wrestlers and submission artists and stuff. And it looks like he's kind of going that route with these. He has like a projector and he's like talking about, you know, strategy and all this stuff. And I think that someone like Danny Burch would be perfect for that group. Danny Burch, Oney Lorcan, obviously guys like Drew Gulak and some others would be just so perfect for something like that. And I want to see them do more of Danny Burch, but I also really like seeing that they're pushing Tony Nese more. He's just in kind of this, he's been in this kind of weird no man's land for a long time. He's been the former cruiserweight champion, but pretty much since then, Tony Nese has been positioned as a guy who's good enough to beat everybody but the champion. Like, he's really, like, in this, he's like a upper level perennial, I don't want to say gatekeeper, but kind of that right now, where, like, if you beat Tony Nese, you're probably moving on to a title shot. But Tony Nese himself isn't, like, a real threat to the title at the moment, especially considering the champion is also a heel, Escobar, and we also have, you know, Swerve still in that mix and stuff, so. But Tony Nese still looking good. He's always been solid in the ring. He's always had really entertaining matches, in my opinion. And this was just another one. I mean, this is just par for the course as far as Tony Nese goes, as far as Danny Burch goes, and really as far as 205 Live goes. Just another solid show of wrestling. So check it out. Moving on, we have Impact Wrestling results. Show started off with Susie and Kylie Rae defeating Kimberly and Deonna Purrazzo. Finish came when Susie hit the Arachnorana into a panic switch for the pin on Kimberly to get the 1-2-3. After that, we see Trey lobbying for a shot at the X Division Championship, and Chris Bay is also guaranteed a rematch. TJP is also in that mix. We're going to talk about that here in just a second a little bit more. Next match we had was Team Triple XL defeating the Deaners. Finish came when AC is slammed by Cousin Jake, and then Larry knocks out Jake with the best hand in the house for the 1-2-3. I like both of these teams. Like, I know I talk about it all the time. I'm especially high on Jake something, a.k.a. Cousin Jake, but it's been cool seeing AC Romero. Like, he's lost a lot of weight, and looks a lot healthier than he did even just like a few months ago. So big shout out to him for what he's doing right now. You know, solid little tag team match here. Team Triple XL gets the win. I'm totally cool with that. Moving on, we had Trey Miguel defeating TJP. Got the win after hitting a meteor off the top rope for the 1-2-3. Literally the only thing I have against this match, and this is not, a lot of people will disagree with this, it's just personal opinion. I am not a fan of the Meteora, and I'm definitely not a fan of it as a finisher. Like, I'm just not a fan of the move in general. I think it looks kind of goofy, and it doesn't look very, like, it would hurt very much. It's just one of these things, like, I'm just not, it's just a move I've never been into. Quite a few really good wrestlers have used it over the years. But Trey is so insanely talented. He can do so many other moves instead that would be way more impressive, so. Yeah, not a fan of the actual finish here, but I'm a fan of the result. Like, I'm totally cool with Trey Miguel getting the win here over TJP. And, we basically, I'll just talk about it now because I can't remember exactly in the show where it happened, but, we basically find out that TJP, Trey Miguel, and Chris Bay are going to wrestle a triple threat to determine who the next challenger for Rohit Raju's X Division title is going to be. So I think that that triple threat match is going to be fire. I mean, say what you want about these people, you know, as human beings. Like, I know that, like, TJP, a lot of fans are really down on him at the moment for various reasons and stuff. But as far as, like, on the screen, storylines, in-ring wrestling, I like the whole story right now with the X Division Championship. I like the fact that there's all these contenders right now. I like that we're going to get a really, well, what I would imagine is going to be a really good triple threat match to determine the number one contender. And then Rahit Raju, I think, is a great champion. He hasn't done a whole lot with the belt yet, but the man behind Rahit Raju that I always knew is Hakeem Zayn on the indies. This is just a really great case of hard work paying off. Now, do I think Chris Bay should have lost the X Division Championship? No. I think he should have kept it, especially after beating Willie Mack twice. I don't really love the booking decisions there, but I do really like seeing Rahit Raju with the belt. Like, I like seeing him get this opportunity, and I'm here for it. Like, I'm interested in seeing where this goes going forward, because at the one thing that I do know is this will lead to a lot of good matches. Like, the guys I just mentioned, all those guys involved, great wrestlers in the ring, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they all do. After that, we had the main event, well, not the main event of the show. Jeez, we got a lot still on the show. I don't know why I thought this was the main event. We had Brian Myers and Willie Mack. Willie Mack gets the win, finally. He'd lost to Brian Myers last week and the week before, I believe. With Myers getting underhanded victories. In this one, Willie Mack winds up using an exposed turnbuckle that Brian Myers had set up and hits him with a stunner to get the 1-2-3. Really like that. Willie Mack needs to get these wins. This was great because you really I talk about it all the time. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but you really need to push Willie Mack as a singles guy, especially when you have Rich Swann going up against Eric Young soon for the world title. I feel like Willie Mack could also be in that mix very easily. There's built-in stories there. So they need this. I hope this is the beginning of them rebuilding Willie Mack, because he was in a great spot when he was the X Division champion. Lost the belt. I didn't think he should have lost the belt to Chris Bay when he did, but I was okay with it, though, because Chris Bay is so talented. I thought there was going to be a long-term story there, but they pretty much just had the rematch right away, and that was it. Since then, Willie Mack was taking loss after loss after loss. Good to finally see him get the win here. After that, we had Kiera Hogan defeating Taya Valkyrie. Got the win with a swinging neckbreaker for the 1-2-3. And in the main event of the show, we had Ace Austin, Madman Fulton, and The North defeating the Motor City Machine Guns and the Good Brothers. The finish came after basically The North hits their finisher on Chris Sabin, but then Ace Austin tags himself in, blind tag, and steals the pin for the 1-2-3. I like this. I like that team winning. I like Ace Austin getting the pinfall. He's been taking too many L's lately. This guy should have walked away at Slammiversary with the Impact World Heavyweight Championship. Love the fact that Eric Young is the champion now, but at the time I thought Ace Austin was the right move. He's been taking a lot of tag team losses lately, and being the one actually taking the pinfalls in a lot of scenarios, he needed this win, even though it was slimy, which is exactly what his character is, so it totally makes sense. I actually like seeing the Good Brothers lose here, because I figured they were just going to win over and over and over until they got like a title match or something. So, and granted, Gallows and Anderson weren't involved in the pinfall, the deciding pinfall here, but we have four really good tag teams here. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think Ace Austin should be doing his own thing. He should be a singles wrestler. He proved that with his X Division title run. I think Madman Fulton is great as like an enforcer for him. I'm not huge on them being a tag team, especially when they have so many good teams. But you have the North, which is still, in my opinion, one of, if not the best teams in the world. I think they have the best array of tag team moves, double team moves in the world. I love what the North does cohesively as a unit. Then, of course, you have the tag team champions, the Motor City Machine Guns, who are just fantastic, and the Good Brothers, who are still, you know, they still got that big chip on their shoulder. They're still trying to prove kind of to the U.S. world what they showed everyone when they were a part of New Japan. So we'll see where all this heads, but I like seeing Ace Austin get the win here in the main event. I really, really thought that was smart. Moving on, we got some results for the New Japan G1. So the G1 Climax, we've had two nights of it so far, and we've had A Block and B Block. I'm going to start off with results for the A Block. We had Kota Ibushi defeating Okada. Huge win for Ibushi there. Jay White defeating Tagachi. We had Minoru Suzuki defeating Tomohiro Ishii, which is just, or Ishii, I guess you should say. I know people pronounce it different ways, Ishii and Ishii. I'll just go with Ishii. I love this match. I will watch the two of these guys wrestle always. Like, Tomohiro Ishii is who I actually want to win the entire tournament. I know he won't. I know that's a super long shot, but I've always been a fan of Ishii, and I feel like they stop-start his momentum so often. Like, they build him to a point of being world championship level, and then, like, he just gets kind of, like, relegated to the mid-card. Then he's world title level and mid-card, but they've never given him the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. I would love to see him with that title belt, especially considering the current champion, Evil. I think, this is personal opinion, I think Ishii's way better than Evil when it comes to everything to do with pro wrestling. I can say the same about a lot of people in this tournament over Evil, to be fair, but Minoru Suzuki getting the win over Ishii, I'm totally fine with that. Suzuki is a freaking legend in mixed martial arts and in professional wrestling. He's still doing his thing. I'm still entertained by it. Good stuff there. Tai Chi defeated Jeff Cobb, who I believe has recently re-signed with New Japan Pro Wrestling. So that was interesting. Jeff Cobb had one match in AEW. Looks like he signed, at least for the time being, with New Japan. We also had Will Ospreay defeating Yujiro Takahashi. And in a non-tournament match, we had Yomura defeating Yuta Tsuji. So that was the results for Block A. Block B results, when these come up here. But yeah, Block A, just fire. Block B, even more fire. So in a non-title match, we had Tsuji defeating Gabriel Kidd. As far as the actual tournament matches go, Juice Robinson defeated Yoshihashi. This, in my opinion, so, like, I'm not a big Yoshihashi fan, and I like Juice Robinson, but not as much as most people seem to. I've given him a lot of chances. He's just not, there's something missing there with him, too. He's shown flashes of brilliance. He's had some really good stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's had some really good matches in New Japan. But him and Yoshihashi, this is probably the most underwhelming matchup I could possibly see in a tournament like this. We had Toru Yano defeating Sonata, which I hate. I am not a Yano fan. I know that's going to trigger a lot of people. I'm not a hater of comedy wrestling. I love Orange Cassidy. You know, there's plenty of comedy wrestling that I do enjoy. But Yano, like, this is what he's used for. He's used for comedy within the context of, like, super serious sports-style wrestling. He's the guy in there taking the turnbuckle pads off and being goofy and getting roll-up victories and stuff. I do not like seeing him get victories over Sonata. I think Sonata is a guy. I mean, Evil was the damn champion. They were longtime tag team partners, Evil and Sonata. Sonata always was the better wrestler between the two. Always the one that people figured was the next potential breakout, you know, singles wrestler between the two. Figured he'd be the world champion at some point, Sonata, that is. And now he's taking losses to Yano. Not a fan of that. We also got Kenta defeating Hirooki Goto. I like this a lot. Goto's a guy that I feel like should be used in a position of, like, gatekeeper, where if you can beat Goto, you're a top-level guy, but if you can't, you're still kind of, like, in the mid-level. Goto's had a hell of a career, but I just don't see him in a position where he should ever be, you know, the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. Don't think he should be the Intercontinental Champion again, nothing like that. And where I feel the opposite about Kenta, I think they've been doing a great job rebuilding him after him leaving the WWE. I think that Kenta versus Jon Moxley, whenever it happens for the U.S. Championship, is going to be fire, and I really like Kenta getting the win over Goto here. Zack Sabre Jr. defeats Evil, which I like as well, because I think Zack Sabre Jr. is infinitely more talented than Evil is, and Zack Sabre Jr. now holds a win over the current IWGP Heavyweight and Intercontinental Champion Evil right here in this tournament in the first round. The double champion loses in the first round of this tournament. That just goes to show you kind of how the perception of Evil as a champion. I just wrong move. Wrong move putting those belts on him. And Zack Sabre Jr. getting the win, I'm great with, because I think Zack Sabre Jr. is super talented. He's a guy that I would love to see as the heavyweight champion or the Intercontinental Champion in New Japan. So really like seeing Zack Sabre Jr. getting that win. And then you had Tetsuya Naito defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi. Great stuff. I mean, this is literally two legends of New Japan Pro Wrestling going at it. You know they're always going to bring it. It's always going to be a good match. Tanahashi is now 0-1 in the tournament, But if we know anything about Tanahashi, it's you can never count him out. He really is the John Cena of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And even though he lost this match, it's totally possible he wins the entire tournament still. But great to see Naito get this win too, because he needs it after losing the belts to Evil. So really good stuff. Block A and Block B, just so much talent, so much good stuff. And I will make sure to give you all the results every weekend right here on the Fightful Select Weekender throughout the rest of the tournament. Moving on, we have results for UWN Primetime Live. This is a new weekly show that is basically, so they're running out of Thunder Studios in California. They're going to be running a few shows. This is the United Wrestling Network. And the reason that this show was so important is because the main event was Nick Aldis and Mike Bennett for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, which is also really important because the National Wrestling Alliance hasn't done hardly anything in the last few months. Dave Lagana, who was a big part of their production and just overall kind of like the king of all trades there when it came to like their YouTube channel and in their shows and all that stuff, a really big part, a huge part of the company. There was a whole thing with the speaking out movement. He left the NWA. And it's been a rebuilding process. The owner slash president Billy Corgan has said that he is not gonna, sell the company, and they plan to resume shows. And this was a great sign towards that, where the NWA title was on the line. And we've also, of course, seen the women's champion of the National Wrestling Alliance, Thunder Rosa, as a part of AEW recently. And this is just my personal opinion as well, but I think Thunder Rosa is a better wrestler than any of the other women that AEW actually has under contract. So NWA's been looking really good lately, in my opinion. As far as this show is concerned, we had the West Coast Pro Championship, Alexander Hammerstone defeating EJ Sparks to retain the belt. We had Jordan Clearwater defeating Will Alday. Camille defeating Heather Monroe. The Tribe defeated Wolf Zaddies. Or sorry, the Tribe and Wolf Zaddies ended in a draw. Sorry. We had Chris Dickinson defeating Jordan Cruz. Really like seeing Chris Dickinson as a part of this show. He's one of those guys I talk about so often, as he's in the top echelon of independent talent who's not currently signed to a major company right now. I could totally see Chris Dickinson popping up in AEW or Impact Wrestling or even NXT in the very, very near future. And this is just another sign of that. More exposure for Chris Dickinson. We had the UWN Television Championship, where Dan Joseph defeated Levi Shapiro to retain the belt. And in the main event, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, Nick Aldis retains the belt over Mike Bennett. And I really like this as well. I said it on last week's show, didn't think that it'd be a good idea to put the belt on Mike Bennett, especially because his run with the WWE was just so bad. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying, like, the perception as a wrestling fan after seeing that, you got a lot of work to do to rebuild him. Now, this was a good step in that direction for sure. He had a really good match with Nick Aldis. And there were a few times there where you felt like, wow, Mike Bennett might actually win this match, which is really the best thing they could do, because I didn't think he was. I thought there was no chance in hell Mike Bennett was going to actually win the title here. So for them to give me even that little bit of doubt, really good stuff. Nick Aldis has now reigned for over 700 days straight, and this is his second reign with the NWA title. Hell of a champion for that brand, has done so much to rebuild the credibility of everything, and I thought this was definitely the right move. Looking forward to next week, and I will once again continue to bring you the results right here on the Weekender for the upcoming UWN Primetime Live shows. But once again, big shout out to Nick Aldis for over 700 days straight with that title belt. Huge accomplishment. Got some last results here for Warrior Wrestling Stadium Series. This is something that started last week. I gave you all the results for. So since I did that last week, figured I'd continue on this week, let you know what's going on with the Stadium Series. We had Sam Adonis defeating Jake Something. Six-man scramble match, Facade defeating Beastman, Jack Griffin, Icon Lee, Danny Moe, and Dan the Dad. A lot of really good talent in that one. Like seeing Facade get the win too, because he's a guy who does not get a whole lot of they get a whole lot of love out there. Like, he's a great independent wrestler. I saw him for the first time in the Nashville Fairgrounds years back. Gives me really, really serious, like, Jeff Hardy type vibes, but in a good way. and does really crazy stuff. Has a unique look. I really like what Facade brings to the table. Recently went to Japan for a while. I think that if you aren't already hearing about Facade, he's someone you're going to be hearing about way more often. Or at least I hope so, because he's really been overlooked in my opinion the last few years. We had Lee Moriarty defeating Trey Lamar. This was awesome. Lee Moriarty, I love seeing him get the win here because a lot of the time when I see Moriarty wrestle, he loses, but he comes out of the match with people being like, "Oh man, I want to see more of that guy." So seeing him get this win, I like a lot. And Moriarty is a guy who he is going to break out so big. It's one of those things where like once some of the people like Chris Dickinson, like I just mentioned, and some of the others that are a little above him in the pecking order right now, as far as like the indies are concerned, you got guys like Mance Warner and Matthew Justice and a lot of really good independent talent right now that I feel like is going to be getting signed any day to larger companies. As those people get signed, it opens up spots for guys like Lee Moriarty, and I think that Moriarty is he's a great technical wrestler, does a little bit of everything, just so much potential. Cannot wait to see the future for this kid. And I just can't say enough good things. And I feel like I see him wrestling everywhere right now. Every time I turn on IWTV or read any results for anything going on, boom, there's the name Lee Moriarty. So he's out there, he's making towns, he's putting the miles in, and he is having great showings every time I've seen him. So huge shout out to Lee Moriarty. Ace Austin and Madman Fulton defeated Bounces Forever, the team of Dominic Greene and Kevin Koo. I mean, I'm totally fine with the outcome here, even though, I mean, Bounces Forever, kind of my boys. I love that Greene and Koo are both now signed to MLW. Greene had been there for a while, and Koo recently signed. Once again, I'm not huge on the tag team of Austin and Madman Fulton, but they are the bigger stars. I mean, let's just be honest. Right now, more people are going to know that team because of their work in Impact Wrestling. But Greene and Koo, they're really a case of two guys that I think they're better together than separate. I like both of them as singles wrestlers, but I think they complement each other really, really well as a tag team. And a little pat on the back for myself, I've been a fan since day one of this tag team. I actually have a Sad Comp T-shirt, which was their name before they became Bounces Forever. So. Definitely been watching these guys for a long time, and it's cool to see them as a part of the show. Although, once again, I mean, it's great to see Ace Austin win, but as a tag team, I think it would have done a lot for Bounces Forever to get this victory. After that, we had Kimberly defeating Jordynne Grace. This is good, but everyone knows at this point, I'm really biased towards Jordynne Grace. I feel like Jordynne Grace should always win every match she's in. She brings something totally different to the table. Her look, her strength, everything that she brings to the table, it's just different, and it's good. And I like Kimberly as well. But I'm a bigger Jordynne Grace fan. That's just me personally. We had Frank the Clown and Robert Ego Anthony talk about how they attacked Joey Janela. So Joey Janela was attacked last week, and we found out that this is who did it. Janela versus Anthony is going to happen next week in a street fight, and then they wind up beating up Jordynne Cross. Jonathan Gresham versus Alex Shelley defeats in a double pin draw, which is fine. Two of the best wrestlers on the independent scene. Alex Shelley, just an absolute legend. Jonathan Gresham becoming a legend. I mean, I can't say enough good things about Jonathan Gresham. I've said it a thousand times, I think he should have already been the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion at least once by now. Totally hope he defend that he wins the Pure Championship in this tournament, but huge, huge, huge match. Gresham and Al Shelley and double pin draw. That's just gonna set up another match between the two, and I'm totally here for it. Luchasaurus and Tay Conti defeated Chris Bay and Ray Lynn. Another good match. A lot of great talent. Obviously, we all know Luchasaurus. Tay Conti was recently signed by AEW. Chris Bay, just one of the best workers in the world. Great character. So his swag and his theme music and the way he carries himself, everything. I think Chris Bay is just a total star. So great stuff there. There was a Triple Threat number one contenders match where Trey Miguel defeated Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz. So it was their three rascals against each other in a Triple Threat match where Trey Miguel got the win. Great stuff. Would have been fine with anyone winning this, but Trey has been positioned kind of more as like the leader of the three, and this makes sense. And in the main event, Brian Pillman Jr. defeated Warhorse to retain the Warrior Wrestling Championship. I'm a little indifferent about this. Like, it's cool to see Brian Pillman get the win here, especially because he'll probably be more valuable to the actual brand of Warrior Championship Wrestling. But Warhorse is the independent wrestling.tv champion. I feel like he should be getting. I think they just need to be really protective of Warhorse, and they have been for, what feels like the last year or so. Now, this also helps out Brian Pillman Jr., helps his perception. He's obviously, a part of AEW. So I'm not like disappointed in this, but it is something where I feel like Warhorse needs to be really protected because we have seen him on AEW as well, and I feel like he's going to be signed any day now, whether it's AEW, Impact, or NXT. So, not huge on Pillman beating Warhorse, but like I'm okay with it, especially if we get more matches between the two in the future. But really good show here. Another kind of one of those under the radar shows. You can find this right now on Fight TV, FITE TV, and yeah, check it out. A lot of really good talent there. And lastly, we have a recap for you of Being the Elite, the latest episode titled A Very Slippery Slope. Show starts off with a promo class where Eddie Kingston cuts a promo on a cookie. I can't do this justice, just go check it out. We then see the Young Bucks talking with Brandon Cutler about how they need to really go back to what made them popular, doing vlogs, being themselves, looking out for themselves, not losing to jobbers, not putting jobbers over in their own words. Cutler brings up Alex Marvez and that he's trying to get an interview with the Young Bucks, and we get footage of the Young Bucks doing the double super kick to Marvez. They wind up getting fined over it, and they wind up throwing money into Tony Khan's office. We then see Silver and Reynolds challenge TH2 to a dance-off. Really funny line. Silver's like, "If you two chodes win, we'll leave you alone. But if us two cho I mean if we win, you have to join the Dark Order," which just another great line from John Silver, who is just killing it week after week. Hilarious. Bryce Remsburg is the referee for the dance-off. He winds up going to the three judges to decide a winner. The first judge, Wardlow, says Silver and Reynolds won by a landslide. Orange Cassidy just says those guys, just as a lazy point over to TH2. So the deciding vote is going to be Stu Grayson, who says, "John, Alex, you effing suck. TH2 win." So Grayson causes his own Dark Order brothers to lose the dance off. Dark Order then puts Kool-Aid on the table for Orange Cassidy, and he once again, for the third time, just slowly knocks it off the table. And Silver is upset because he might wind up getting sticky feet again from splashing around in the Kool-Aid on the ground. After that, we get a really funny. I mean, this was just. I love how they did this. So we get a video of, it says a few days before All Out, and it's Kenny and the Young Bucks booking the Joker slot for the Casino Battle Royal. Michael Nakazawa comes into the room and wants into the match, finds out he's not going to be the Joker, and finds out it's going to be Matt Sydal. Inside the room, Kenny and the Young Bucks are talking about how awesome Matt Sydal is, how he does the best shooting star press in the business. Basically, this guy never messes up. This is going to be a great surprise. Going to put him over big time. And we then wind up seeing Michael Nakazawa go to the ring while no one's paying attention and puts his oil all over the turnbuckle. So when Sydal botches that shooting star press, it's because Michael Nakazawa has put oil all over the. He sabotaged him by putting oil on the turnbuckles, which is just brilliant that they did this. Kenny sees it happening while he's watching the show with the Young Bucks backstage, and he's like, "Oh man, now me and Hangman have to go and save this show." And Nick says he looks like the Shockmaster. Sorry about that. Nick says he looks like the Shockmaster. Kenny's like, "What a effing joker." Really funny stuff. And they actually explain the botch and poke some fun at it, which I thought was really great. Nakazawa comes in and admits to them that he was the one behind the botch. After that, we see Evil Uno in the Dark Order. Uno says that he needs to show everybody something that he saw in the bathroom. They say that Stu Grayson gets to go in there first because he's the longest. It's just hilarious. on the bathroom mirror in red paint, it says Brody Sucks, B-R-O-D-Y-S-U-X. And underneath it says Stu, S-T-O-O-O. Brody Lee comes in and he's trying to find out who wrote this on the mirror. Keeps putting over how great Ten's guns are. His muscles on his arms, just hilarious. Brody Lee's delivery is amazing. Brody Lee's the best. I love that guy. I love that his whole kind of delivery and everything. Like, for those of you who don't know, he's a big fan of the Kevin Smith movies, like Mallrats. And his name Brody Lee actually comes from the name Brody Bruce, who is a character in that universe. And you can tell through his comedy that he takes a lot of influence from that. And for me, I think it's absolutely hilarious. Just really funny stuff. Grayson is holding a red brush, or a brush with red paint on the end of it. He's like, yeah, they just told me to hold this. Reynolds, or basically Brody's just going one after another and just trying to find out who did this. They get to Reynolds, who has red paint all over his hands, so clearly he was the one who did it, and they were clearly trying to frame Grayson as the one. So basically the Dark Order's trying to get Grayson in trouble with Brody, because Grayson is by far Brody's favorite in the group. Then Silver winds up walking out, and he's just completely covered in red paint, which is just hilarious. Then we see Colt Cabana. His face is still taped up. He uses the "I want to talk to Samson" line, which is straight out of the movie Half-Baked, which I thought was a great nod to that. A lot of people probably didn't catch that, but it's one of my favorite movies ever, so I like that a lot. He's looking for a doctor to fix his face still. He sees DR written or typed out on a thing for a room, a locker room. He opens it. It's Dustin Rhodes, DR. So he's still looking for a doctor. Christopher Daniels comes up to him, calls him doctor, but says that he calls everyone doctor. Thinks he's going to a doctor's room. Sees Luther there. Luther yells, "Get out of here!" at him. They're really lame. I don't want to get too down this rabbit hole, but I'm really like, Luther does nothing for me in AEW. I know he's Jericho's boy. I have yet to talk to anybody who's a fan of AEW who's like, "Oh yeah, we'll love seeing Luther as a part of the show." Like, it just does nothing at all for me on Being the Elite or as a part of the company. Just my personal opinion. Christopher Daniels is doing a plug for Silver Fox Vodka at a bar, one of his like 50 plus segments. After he finishes that, Hangman is sitting there. He's drunk. They're at the bar. Brandon Cutler wants to talk to Hangman off the record. Says that the Young Bucks don't want to talk about Hangman when he keeps bringing them up. Basically, Hangman's trying to get Cutler to drink with him. Cutler's like, "No, I don't drink." And Hangman's like, "If I had your effing record, I would," which I thought was a hilarious line. Hangman basically says that Cutler has two contracts but still can't do anything right. He makes fun of Dungeons and Dragons, tells him to go try again, and tells him to get the job done, tells him to go talk to the Young Bucks and actually have this conversation. And Cutler just basically kills him with kindness, and yeah, so we'll see where that all heads. Hangman's basically trying to make up with the group, but he's still being an asshole along the way, so a lot of dynamics there. Matt Hardy is talking to the Young Bucks. He's being way too normal, and he's talking about himself and his family and how much he loves the Young Bucks. The Bucks are confused with how normal he's being, but says that his baby isn't normal, which is pretty funny. Nakazawa then tells Matt Sydal about how he sabotaged him with the oil for the botched shooting star press. Initially Sydal's like, "No, man, it happens. Like, I've been doing this move forever. Like, eventually something like that was going to happen. High risk, I know the risks." And Nakazawa actually explains to him what he did, and then Sydal gets mad and starts chasing him off for trying to kill him. After that, we see the Young Bucks talking to Brandon Cutler. Matt is wearing his women's Cracker Barrel shirt that they stole in the last episode. Cutler asks the Young Bucks to be ringside or in the crowd for when he has his match against Peter Avalon in AEW Dark. Spoiler alert, that match in AEW Dark ended in a double countout. I'd imagine that the blow-off for this, the final, someone finally getting a win, I think will happen on the 1 year anniversary of Dynamite. That's just my guess. So we'll see what winds up happening there. And the end of the show happens when Megabyte Ronnie, who is an actual competitive eater, he basically eats two cakes really fast while Brandon Cutler is on the phone. And Cutler is like super shocked, is like, where'd this cake go? Megabyte Ronnie has it all over himself, all over his hands, all over the table, but he ate most of it.
Kind of a weird method he went with. He went with using his hands. If he would have just cut the cake up, he would have been able to eat it way faster. But that's just me. Says he couldn't control himself, and he just loves the cake, and that's the end of the episode. That's gonna do it for this episode of Being the Elite, as well as this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to shoot me a follow on Twitter at FightTalk _. That's FightTalk_. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.